Mini-episode 1044 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1044. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with two of our great baseball talking dignitaries with me here today, Ken Detweiler and Steve Callis. When last the three of us gathered, it was for our Don Koster Memorial segment prior to the start of the MLB season here in 2018, and I look forward to the second annual one where we will preview the MLB season in Don's honor in 2019. But right now, what the three of us are doing is getting ready to look at what has happened through the first 162 games of the regular season. There's a 163rd coming in two different places the day after we tape this. That's kind of a bugaboo of mine, and we'll get to that. To me, anything beyond the regular 162 equals playoffs. I know Major League Baseball doesn't agree for their own anal retentive reasons, but we are taping this, of course, in advance of knowing how exactly the National League bracket is going to shake out. But we're going to take a look at everything and hazard our guesses as best we can heading into this thing. So I'll start with the counselor here, Steve Callis. Steve, great to have you back on, my man, and looking forward to talking baseball with you as I did some months ago.
Same here. Great to be with you and Ken. I always enjoy it. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely, as do I. And my good friend Ken Detweiler, for whom, of course, I was a sidekick on the legendary Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler back in the old Sports Talk Network days. Ken, as always, great to have you back on talking baseball, buddy.
It's good to use the quote Peyton Manning. It's good to get the band back together.
Ah, yes, it is. It really is.
Good to talk to both of you again. What's that?
It really is. It's great to be on with both of you guys. And as we head into this thing here today, I'm just going to start, generally speaking, just by asking a question and seeing for either of you guys. I had sent out to you guys earlier today, and we have it up at the FDH Lounge multimedia magazine, the fdhlounge.blogspot.com, our final MLB season power rankings as well as our UQB rankings. We did these at the All-Star break, Labor Day, and then now again at the end of the season. Basically a mashup of a bunch of different rankings, put them all in a bowl, kind of see how it went, stirred it together, and this is what it spits out. So it shows the strengths and weaknesses if you look at the specifics of the numbers in different ways, and it's something to kind of give us an overview of all of the teams in the playoff mix here. We have both the regular 1 through 30 UQB standings, ultimate quantitative baseline that FDH has, as well as we did a separate one where we broke out the 10 teams and just measured them against each other. So any thoughts, any surprises from either of you two guys from anything you'd look through on this prior to this segment?
Well, for me, I mean, I understand the power rankings, and for the most part, I agree with them. I'm still not sure how to look at Colorado from an offensive perspective, but I'm really focusing in the world of offense, which we are now in, and we might just call that, I don't know, home runs, walks, strikeouts, which comprise like a third of all at-bats in the major leagues this year. And I think more strikeouts than hits for the first time in the history of Major League Baseball. I think you got it right, but when I'm looking at the playoffs, I'm looking more at the pitching than the hitting, and I'm going to take Boston down a few notches, and we'll get into it when we actually go into the games, because their starting pitching in the playoffs is horrific, led by 0-8 David Price. He's never won a game as a starter in the playoffs, and that's a pretty big sample. But overall, I kind of agree with these rankings. Obviously, it shows you how good these guys are vis-a-vis the other teams in the league. But even among themselves, I don't doubt in my mind that Boston and Houston are the two best teams. but I'm going to wind up leaning towards Houston because, in my view, of the lack of pitching in the playoffs for Boston.
That's a great point. And, Ken, I got to say, as we get into this, Steve's point about Colorado and the offense is well taken. Out of the teams in the playoff field, and you wouldn't imagine this for a team that plays at Coors Field, but 10th, last of the 10 teams in the playoffs in OBP, 10th in OPS plus. You really wouldn't expect that, but that is the case. It's kind of a skewed kind of a thing. It's not quite as dramatic as 2007 when they won for like the last month and a half heading into the regular season. This year it was just 49 and 29 in July, August, and September, so less dramatic than it was in 07. Where they went several Equinox cycles without losing a game and came in with a lot of momentum. That does kind of make them very tough to evaluate. One of the things that jumped out at me, Ken, was our Indians here. Last in all of the teams here, when you do the ranking, that's the half power rankings and half strength of schedule. The Indians on our strength of schedule meter this year, 30th in MLB. By the way, that's last. So again, I worry a little bit. I worry about the glass jaw. I worry about that because the Indians have spent the summer beating up on the stuck nuts of the Central Division here, whilst other teams have been beating their brains in with legitimate competition. So that's one of the things. You don't know if it's going to affect them or not, but it is something I worry about.
Well, I think both you guys, as we get through the show here, and I'll give you a little hint right now, that I think Cleveland's numbers are skewed simply because I've had teams and watched teams that haven't played really Major League Baseball since before the 4th of July. And they've just been sitting around hoping they don't stretch their eyes out and pull their hair out. I think they're more than ready for a big, big surprise here in October. So numbers can tell you a lot, as we know. But I think if we don't use caution as far as the numbers standing alone on their own and just regular baseball and what the players are going through, I think we'd be remiss.
Well, you know, as I said before, you know, that's why they play the games. As I say, though, I mean, I am kind of lying on the fetal position in a dark room muttering that to myself. Well, that's why they play the games. You know, I'm not saying it with a lot of optimism.
Next to me over there.
I'm saying it as a coping mechanism, Ken. You know, I mean, that's,
I know.
You know.
I know. God, I know.
We got to see what happens.
If I was on the first floor right now, I'd jump out the window.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, 2016 was a year where you look at the champions in different sports, and listen, if it had been the Cubs or the Indians, it would have fit this theme, but teams breaking through, or cities also in the case of Cleveland with the Cavs being champs, my Western Bulldogs in the AFL, Leicester City in the English Premier League, all across sports that year, it was a thing of long-time droughts being snapped. I tell you what, I would feel a lot better about the Indians if England had won the World Cup because you had Washington winning the Stanley Cup. This could have been the year of teams past the sell-by date, you know? The Indians had a 22-game winning streak last year, choked in the playoffs. This could have been the year for teams that we'd written off, but then they win it anyways. But England had to blow the World Cup, and now my theme goes out the window, so my optimism goes down.
Steve, can you tell we're from Cleveland?
Yes.
I can, but I think they're a big factor. I think you're onto something, Ken.
Well, you know, let's start with this series, guys, because this is the one where, again, we know what's going to happen. It's kind of a novelty right now. We know the two teams that are going to be in the division series. We cannot say that about any of the other teams who are going to be squaring up starting Thursday and Friday. It is, of course, Houston hosting the first two, then two in Cleveland, if need be, game five back in Houston. The defending champion Astros against the team that a lot of us, myself included, had penciled in to go through the field in 2017. The Indians, no surprise that both of these teams are back in there this year. Again, if you look at the UQB breakdown, you can't really find too many areas. Actually, there's one area, OBP, where the Indians are third out of all the teams in the field. Houston is fourth. That's the only one where they match up better. You hear concerns a lot if you're talking to Indians fans about the bullpen, and that's going to be the case also. The Indians are definitely a team that benefits from being able to put their fifth starter in the bullpen and get a little bit of extra depth there. But the ninth inning, if Tito does the whole over-loyalty thing that he is unfortunately known for from time to time, like playing Jason Kipnis 3 months after he was legally dead, and keeping Cody Allen in there in the ninth inning after you've traded for Brad Hand. So you can tell from what I'm saying, I don't have a great feeling about this. I think Houston is still a juggernaut. I think the Indians take a game, and the fan in me would like to see it, and the analyst in me says the Indians certainly have a chance. It wouldn't be the biggest upset we've seen. My guess is Houston in four in this one here. Ken, I'll turn to you.
All right. Well, here I go down my merry path, and I'm telling you right now, first of all, part of the reason I'm choosing the Indians to win this series is this is like a kegger in the major leagues, and this is a topic for another day, guys, in case you want to get the band back together again. The Yankees have more home runs ever in the history of the game. The White Sox more Ks. The Indians, first time, all four starting pitchers, or four of the starting pitchers, over, 200 strikeouts?
Yep.
It's just like, it's home. I don't like the way the game's gone, but that's a different story for a different day. With that being said, I'm going to go back to what Steve had mentioned in his opening remarks, that he loves pitching. I love pitching. I think pitching will always be hitting. However, Houston has a nice staff themselves. Now they've had added Garrett Cole onto that staff. But I just have a feeling, watching Tito this last month or two, well, the last month in particular, how he's lining everything up, how he's doing this and doing that. And it's subtle, and no one else is paying attention to it, or very few. But I think it's masterful what he's been doing with these guys. And that gives me great hope. I say the Indians will win 3-2.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, in a game five in Houston, no less. Steve, you're the tiebreaker. How you see it going?
Yeah, well, on our show early in the year, I picked the Astros to go all the way, and I have seen enough of them come back from injury to think that they can do it again. If I were Cleveland, I would much prefer to play Boston or the Yankees or the Oakland A's. But just the way these things worked out, and of course Boston went crazy, just the way these things worked out, they have to get the Astros. And I have to say, I think Ken makes a good point. Getting Garrett Cole 15-5, he also with 276 strikeouts. They have their own three guys over 200 strikeouts.
Right.
But when I'm looking at their lineup, I mean, they lost a lot of guys for a decent period of time this year. And didn't really miss a whole lot. Correa only played 110 games. Altuve only played 136 games. Whatever you think of the Astros last year versus the Astros this year, this Alex Bregman is a legitimate superstar. He'll get some MVP consideration. And for a guy like him to put up the numbers he put up, you know, he had over 30 homers, over 50 doubles. I thought I saw something where, like, no third baseman had ever done that. And just a star all around. And again, when you get to there, Springer only played 139 games. These are the guys, the superstars we were talking about last year, other than Bregman. They all missed a ton of games this year. But now, as far as I can tell, they're all healthy. You know, they got a guy like Gattis who you look at him, you just look at him and you're like, wow, what is this guy? But then, you know, he's got 25 home runs. No, he looks like a lumberjack who's driving a, you know, pickup truck. But he's also Paul Bunyan to me, so...
he's scary.
Right, but I'm really focusing more on their pitching. I remember last year, and you guys will remember, they killed the bullpen of the Astros correctly, but when they got into the biggest games of all, they actually had Charlie Morton and Lance McCullers come out of the bullpen in Game 7s against the Yankees and the Dodgers, respectively, and shut down the game. So it wasn't about the weakness of their bullpen, and then whatever you think of it, I think the key pickup and the thing that put me over the top before I would change my pick on the Astros, which I would hate to do from the beginning to the end, as they got Ozuna, whatever you think of him, yes, those charges were dropped, but that often happens in these domestic things. Do I think he did something wrong? Absolutely, I do. Did the Astros kind of handle it the best they could handle it? Yes, but here's a guy who walks in. And, you know, Ken Giles was terrible last year. He was terrible this year. They eventually got rid of him. And now Ozuna is a guy who the last 6 weeks has been lights out. I think he was 12 for 12 or something in save opportunities in the last 6 weeks. And so they, when they need that guy at the end, they're not going to have to look to their other starting pitchers. I don't know where Keuchel is. Keuchel hasn't been Keuchel this year. I even left him out. But I'm talking about Verlander and Cole, who are legit. Morton was 15-3 this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the key for them to get them over the hump, A, their health, and B, they got Ozuna, and frankly, he's pretty much been lights out for them. Again, not, you know, we can do the moral stuff some other time, but for him to come in, get those 12 saves, and I'm pretty sure he was 12 for 12, he takes out the Ken Giles factor, if you will, that there was last year, where give A.J. Hinch credit, in Game 7, both of them, you know, he was able to turn to his starters. Wasn't that, I think, it was McCullers who threw like 43 curveballs in a row or something? I think it was him. And that's not to say they won't use them in the middle of the games, but they do have a legit closer this year, and that's a big difference between this year and last year. And they managed to win two Game 7s last year, really, frankly, without a closer. So I like Cleveland a lot. I love their team. You know, I saw a bunch of games when my son was out there at Oberlin for those 5 years. I think Francona is a great manager, not a good manager. I think they're a little weak in the bullpen. Nothing against Oliver Perez, who pitched really well this year, but I guess if you're lefty, you can pitch forever.
Yeah.
The fact that he's still around is incredible, but actually he pitched great this year. He had a 1.39 ERA. So I give them credit. And I think the wild card for Cleveland, and what I wanted to just talk about briefly, is Trevor Bauer. Pitched 4 shutout innings today, threw 51 pitches, looked good. He was, I thought, a legit Cy Young contender till he got hurt. And I think he's a major factor, but you don't know what he is. I even saw a one-minute thing on MLB where they were debating, well, are they going to use him as a super reliever? Are they going to start him in Game 3? You know, if he's 100% and on his game, I think you've got to start him. He's a top starter. He was a top, before he got hurt this year, he was a top 6 or 7 starter. And if you guys know better than me, if Kluber was hurt last year, Kluber's another guy who is usually lights out in the playoffs. I know the Yankees beat him last year, but I thought that was due to injury.
Right.
Because he just didn't look like Kluber, and they smacked him around, and that, like, never happens.
Right.
No.
That's true. That's true.
So I think it's going to be a good series. I do like the Astros in 4. Again, I think they're healthy now, and all their batters came back. And again, Bregman's a star. So, you know, that's, you know, I haven't even mentioned Lindor and Ramirez, both of whom are superstars in my book. I just think Cleveland got a bad draw. They got a good draw during the regular season to be in the division, but I think they got a bad draw in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because if you asked me if Cleveland was playing any of the other 3 teams in the American League, I would pick Cleveland.
Very interesting. Yeah. Well, again, you talk about drawing the short straw. What the Indians end up having to do is, if you beat Houston, in all likelihood, as much as I'm down on my hands and knees praying for it to be Oakland, in all likelihood, it's going to be Boston or New York waiting for them in the ALCS. And on that note, I'm going to start with you, Steve, as a New Yorker. So you look ahead here. We go into the wild card game. Yankees host Oakland in this one. I've got the Yankees getting through that one. And they've got enough depth of starting pitching here that, again, they're a little bit disadvantaged, obviously, by Boston being able to set their rotation the way that they want it. But for the Yankees, it's not as big of a gap between the top and the middle of their rotation as other teams. Interesting thing here about our ultimate quantitative baseline of the teams in the playoff field, the Yankees are the only team not lower than 4th in any of the categories here. But they are not 1st in any of the categories. The Yankees, it's a narrow band. They are 2nd, 3rd, or 4th in every category by which we rank the 10 teams in the playoffs. So the Yankees are maybe the most consistent team across the board. You look at that roster, and it really kind of stacks up the same way. This is a series where, again, you look at the regular season games, you look at the way Boston pulled away. I think there's a lot of sentiment out there for Boston to be a strong favorite in this series. I will take Boston, but in five games, and it wouldn't surprise me if the last game went 18 innings. I think this game is going to be a war all the way through, Steve. I get a weird feeling about David Price. Again, like I said, hearkening back to Alex Ovechkin, maybe this is the year of redemption. I get the sense that David Price is about to turn the other way. Sometimes you get a feeling about guys. I got that feeling about him. I'm not saying he's going to win a game, but I think he'll redeem himself at least by the low standards of what he's done before. Chris Sale has not gotten too many playoff opportunities, hasn't really made the most of what he has had. You go back to last year, but I think Boston's going to have enough to get through a five-game war. How do you see it, Steve? Or do you see Oakland in there?
No, I see the Yankees getting by Oakland, and God bless Oakland. I don't know how they did it. Smoke and mirrors. I did watch them a lot. Chris with a K, Davis, not to be confused with Baltimore's
the
Chris
better one.
C, Davis, who fell off a cliff this year.
Yeah.
You know, I watched them. I must have watched them just on MLB TV 30 times in the last month, and I've never seen a guy who was always a big strikeout guy, but a dangerous power hitter, of course, just like strike out, and it was like, I don't want to be here. I thought they were going to send him home early, but I don't want to take anything away from Chris with a K, Davis, who was, until this year, I think the least known power hitter, 48 home runs, led the majors, and this Matt Chapman, who nobody knows, is like the best third baseman around, and he's lost in Oakland, but you always have to give him credit. I just think the Yankees have too much firepower, And I agree with you in terms of their pitching. For the last month, when I'm doing my podcast with Joe Stazak, I was just going, well, who's going to start the wild card game for the Yankees? Who is the guy? And Severino fell off a cliff, although he's gotten better lately. Tanaka had, I think, a 22-inning shutout streak and then got smacked around a little. Sabathia I wouldn't trust, although I like him now as, frankly, a guy who took 3 years to finally become, for lack of a better term, a junk ball pitcher, because he's totally changed his game in the last few years. And then, you know, whatever you think of Cashman, picking up J.A. Happ is right now the find of the year, and it looks like they're going with him. His numbers at Toronto were not great, like the last six starts before he came to the Yankees. And as often happens, you put the pinstripes on with some of these guys, and they just become Superman. I mean, he's 7-0 as a Yankee. You have to give him a lot of credit. But as much as I like the Yankees, they have a dangerous lineup. Sanchez started hitting a little at the end of the year. If he's hitting, then, you know, it's unbelievable. Stanton is healthy. Judge looks like he's back. He only finally hit his first home run since that wrist problem. So that should give the Yankee fans hope. But they got the two young guys who are, you know, really, really good, Torres and Andujar. But this is more, to me, an anti-Boston pick, because I'm going to pick the Yankees to beat Boston in the series, and might even like Oakland against Boston, and it is straight up on the starting records. You guys probably know Chris Sale, who's only, I think, pitched in one playoff game and got knocked around.
Yeah.
His ERA, look, Chris Sale is an all-out guy. You watch him pitch, he gives you everything on every pitch in every game. It doesn't matter if it's in April. But historically, his ERA, and he's a superstar pitcher, historically his ERA is one run higher in September than it is in any other month leading up to September.
Right.
And that, to me, is always a sign of being tired. It might be a blessing in disguise for Boston that he was on the disabled list twice. He only threw 158 innings, which is very low for him. So that's kind of the wild card in my mind, being a positive for Boston. They have a great lineup, but they're three starters. Price is 0-8 in the playoffs as a starter. I thought he won a game or two in relief, and people kind of ignore that. But he's a starter, and he's 0-8. He had a lot of trouble with the Yankees earlier in the year. He did pitch one game pretty well against them late in the year. Porcello, I believe, is 0-5 as a starter in the playoffs. Uh-huh. And Chris Sale is 0-1. And if you tell me your three studs are 0-14 as starters, I think that's a problem no matter who you're playing. So this is more, this is not a New York Yankee home job selection. This is more anti-Boston starting pitchers in the postseason, with the exception that a stud like Sale if he's healthy, which he seems to be, and which he is not tired, which I would guess he's not after two stints on the DL, he could go out there and be lights out on two games. And, of course, as you guys know, lefty in Yankee Stadium, he might jam those righties in who get those cheap home runs over the right field fence, which it looks like they don't even hit the ball hard and it goes out there sometimes. So I like the Yankees to beat Oakland, and I like the Yankees to beat Boston, but I will say a five-game series.
Yeah, I see it going five also. Ken, this is one where I'm sure you must be licking your chops to talk about it because a lot of big names, a lot of excitement, a lot that is going to be in this series if it is these two teams here. I'm sure you concur with me that you will be hoping that Oakland can slip through the American League wild card game and that Oakland can do our dirty work for us. I'm always in favor of that. I don't like to have to do any heavy lifting here, but that on the off chance we can get through, we wouldn't have to face either of these two. But I got to think if we are so fortunate, it's going to be one of these two. It's interesting that, again, Steve and I come to different conclusions. I say Boston, he says Yankees. What say you?
Well, as much as it pains me, I'm going to side with Steve.
The Yankees. That's got to hurt.
That hurts really bad. Since you know, the 27 ring thing. So, here we go. I think the Yankees will beat Oakland. Oakland had a Cinderella season. I'm like you guys, I just don't know how they pulled it off, but boy, were they fun to watch and scrap and scratch and carry on. And when everybody told them no, they said, okay, and went ahead and bought their business. So I see the Yankees winning the wild card game, and then I see the Yankees playing Boston, and I have questions about Boston with D.D. Gregorius. And because I think he's a leader. I think the Yankees were missing leaders to a point. They have a lot of nice young ball players, and we know who they are, and we can go ad nauseum about how good they are. Mm-hmm. As far as hitting and everything else, pitching's a question mark. Even their relief at some point, in my mind, is a little question mark. However, one of my favorite players stepped up at the right time at the end of the year, and that's CC Sabathia. I'm old school. I think what he did was like Gorilla Glue. It's going to bind these guys together going forward. It happened at a very opportune time, the end of the season. And they know they're not favorites, probably against Boston. But that's old school. That's telling everybody that, hey, let's go. People aren't going to look down on us. We're the Yankees. And God, this pains me to say this, and I'll have to deny it if you guys tell anybody. But I think it's going to be a cat fight. I think it's going to be 3-2 with the Yankees.
Well, it's interesting that we all agree that one's going five. That one's got war written all over it, and it is going to be fun to watch, and again, may every game go 25 innings, Ken, so that that will give a better chance to whoever's in the next round. mutually assured destruction. Speaking for the most of the country that is not comprised of the North Atlantic seaboard here, so that's how the American League looks. National League, I think we're going to take much more of a 50,000-foot overview because that's all we have available to us right now. There's the fact that the Braves are the National League East champions, and then, don't know anything else at the moment. We are at the end of game 162 in the Major League season, and we don't know the Central and we don't know the West winners. So what you've got on Monday is the doubleheader at Chavez Ravine, Dodgers hosting the Rockies for the National League West Championship. Loser goes into the wild card game. And then later in the afternoon, it is at good old Wrigley Field. It is going to be the Cubs hosting the Brewers. Same deal. Loser goes to the National League wild card game. Stakes are a little higher in that one because you talk about agony to ecstasy. Whoever wins gets home field throughout the National League playoffs. That is the fine line between being a wild card and being a division winner and the number one seed in the National League this year. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this. I think I won't be going out on a limb if either of the Monday games turn out to be lopsided. There have been a lot of complaints recently from baseball purists of like, I don't like this trend of position players coming in pitching in games. Guess what, folks? We're going to see it for the first time ever, and I consider these, again, postseason games. I lump them in. If either of these games gets out of hand, they're not going to the bullpen, folks. If it's 15-3 in the fourth inning, you're going to see a backup shortstop or somebody coming in a tiebreaker game, as they call it, because we've never seen games with these stakes. This isn't win or go home. This is win or lose your chance of winning the pennant by about two-thirds. That's basically what we're looking at here. It's no real win or go home scenario. You've got a long, long, steep road ahead of you, having to win another play-in game and then get to the NLDS in a series where you won't have home field advantage. But it's not the same as win or go home. We've really never seen anything like this before, and that's what this new wild card format sets up. So I will start with you on this one, Ken, in looking at this here. Big picture, beginning of the year, my predictions were, as I was looking at it, I said Cubs-Dodgers, we've seen it 2 years in a row in the NLCS. It's going to be 3 years, and to me, I say the Cubs take the rubber match. So I'll say the way I see it shaking out is Cubs and Dodgers, obviously, to win those two games. And then the wild card game would be, I believe, Milwaukee hosting Colorado. So that would then set up Milwaukee, I believe, will be the winner. That would put them against the Cubs, Dodgers against the Braves. I will say Cubs over Dodgers in the NLCS. That's how I see it shaking out, Ken. As you peer into this big bowl of mud that is the National League playoff hunt at this point, what do you say?
Well, as you know, I don't know if it's still a full moon after some of my comments already. but I seem to be howling a different tune here this year, which shouldn't be a surprise to any of us, I guess, but it is to me, and I'm listening to me, for God's sake. So, let me start off with the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers will beat the Rockies.
Okay.
And the Rockies will be playing in the wild card game. I also see the Brewers beating the Cubs.
Interesting.
And I'll explain, I'll say further, I think the Brewers are playing some of the finest baseball, if not the finest baseball, in the major leagues. And I can get into that at a different point, but it's they have no holes in their lineups that I've seen. Their pitching is more than okay. Is it top-notch? No. But you got a guy like Hader in that bullpen, it's just been electric. So I'm going to go with the Brewers to be playing the Dodgers.
They've really been trending up recently, no question about it, and the trades that they made are a part of that whole thing, and if you're looking at a dark horse team in either league, and ultimately there's only one dark horse in the American League, it's Oakland, because you've got Oakland and four teams that a lot of pundits, I think including us, would kind of call the superpowers there. The National League, you get past the Cubs and the Dodgers, and certainly if you look at our ultimate quantitative baseline that I've been referring to, it shows the Cubs and the Dodgers being a cut above. If you're looking at any of the other three teams there, Colorado kind of seems to be doing it with smoke and mirrors a little bit to me, sort of the same as Oakland. Atlanta, super talented but super young, and I get the sense that they're probably a year ahead of schedule here. So I would agree with you as far as Milwaukee being the tantalizing dark horse in either league. How do you see it shaking up, Steve?
I'm kind of leaning where Ken is leaning. I kind of like the Brewers to beat the Cubs. The Cubs have announced they're going to start Jose Quintana. I'm not a Quintana fan. He was 13-11 with a 4.09 ERA this year. His last three starts, he gave up 9 earned runs in 15 innings and went 0-2. Milwaukee seems to be fine against lefties. It's not really, let's start a lefty to beat Milwaukee. But I saw an article in USA Today. I don't know who's pitching for the Brewers. It might be Chacin. He's like their main guy. Mm-hmm. His last few games aren't great numbers, but he does have 3 good starts against the Cubs in the last 6 weeks, where he gave up 4 earned runs and 2.2 innings, which nowadays makes that excellent pitching. We'll talk about 3 runs. We'll talk about 3 earned runs in 6 innings being a quality start in the 2023 some other time. But I think they do. I think they do have the advantage. And I will say this: I thought for the last 2 or 3 weeks that Yelich was the MVP. I did not realize that he went into today only 2 RBIs behind being a Triple Crown winner. Now, he only went 0-for-2, didn't get any RBIs today. But he was excellent, and again, lost as a Marlin, like many of the Marlins were, and they got rid of all the good ones. But not only did he have a shot at the Triple Crown today, and nobody's been a Triple Crown winner in the National League since Ducky Medwick of the Cardinals in 1937, but he's hit 2 big home runs yesterday. He really is a star. Again, you could argue he's lost in Milwaukee, but I do like the Brewers to beat the Cubs. I'm going with the Dodgers. Also, a little bit on the pitching matchup, this Walker Buehler, who is only a rookie, he's got tremendous stuff. He's got a whip under 1. Mm-hmm. His last 11 games, he's 3-2 with a 1.70 ERA. He's averaging 11 strikeouts per 9 innings. And the opponent's batting average against him in those last 11 starts is 167. Now, he's a rookie, so yep, maybe people will say he can blow up. But he looks pretty good to me. I lean away from the Dodgers generally because my view of Clayton Kershaw is whenever people say, oh, he's Sandy Koufax, oh, he's this, oh, he's that. Whatever you say good about Clayton Kershaw, you have to add at the end in the regular season.
Right.
And you can tell me his numbers compare with Koufax. I've actually said, having been old enough when the Mets came back and my father used to take me to watch the Mets to see Sandy Koufax or Roberto Clemente or Willie Mays or fill in the blank, he is a guy, numbers-wise, who looks to me Koufax-like in the regular season.
Yeah.
But when you get to the postseason, look, he pitched a big game yesterday and gave up 5 earned. So I don't know what it is with Kershaw. He's never been good in a big spot. And the 1 year, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, he pitched okay, and everyone was saying, oh, see, he can pitch in the postseason, and then he came back and got bombed. So, but I think the Dodgers are winning almost around Kershaw, and I did hear Plesac say that Kershaw's velocity is way down this year, and, you know, he was hurt, and he came back, and he was hurt, and he came back. But I don't think they're relying on Kershaw like they used to, and I think they have other pitchers who can make it. So I've got the Brewers and the Dodgers playing for the National League pennant. You know, we can talk about these other games if you want, but it's one game, and then it's one game. And you're right, I agree with you, Rick. I have no problems, though. I have no problems, and I consider myself a baseball purist. I don't really care if you're bringing in, other than the playoffs now, which I agree with you, these are playoff games. If you're bringing in a position player, and this is a different conversation, but the rosters have been 25 players for many, many years, and I think that's an owner-instilled thing.
Yep.
The rosters in baseball for years now should have been, forget 26, should have been 28, 29, 30. In the old days, you literally had, and I'm talking about the old days, you literally had, you know, 4 starters, maybe a closer, a couple of failed starters in the bullpen, so maybe you had like 7 pitchers or 8 pitchers in your whole team. And then you had 17 guys. Now you see teams, they play during the regular season, they literally have 3 position players on the bench because there are so many pitchers.
Right.
And I agree with Jim Leland years ago and everybody this year. September 1st, you can have 20 guys in the bullpen. It's ridiculous.
Yep.
And it's the biggest month of the season, obviously. But those are all for another time. I think the Dodgers have enough, and I think they have a monster lineup. Kemp had a Fountain of Youth year. This Muncy, who nobody ever heard of, has 33 homers. Bellinger was a little down, but still had a good year compared to last year. And then Turner got healthy. He looks healthy now, and he's hitting .315. I've always been a Puig fan. He's a little wacky. He's a little nutty, but he's a 5-tool guy. He lets his emotions get the best of him sometimes. But I think they're loaded enough to beat Milwaukee, so I've got the Dodgers going to the World Series against the Astros.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to say Cubs-Astros. I'm going to say it's a rematch of, or not a rematch, but a matchup of the last 2 World Series winners, which would be very interesting. We haven't seen something like that in quite some time. As far as it goes with the Dodgers, a few notes also on the pitching there. We didn't really touch on this, but one of the reasons that I would take the Cubs over them in the National League Championship Series, questions about quite possibly the finest closer in the game, Kenley Jansen, but what is his physical health situation? It's been iffy at best in the second half of the season. And Clayton Kershaw, to your point, Steve, and looking at this here, again, when's the last time that guy didn't go a strikeout per inning? He just narrowly missed it this year when he is generally far in advance of that figure. So, yeah. You know, but Buehler being the guy that he is coming in, and that's the interesting thing, is that in a lot of ways, I mean, when you look at pedigree and everything like that, it's a lot to put on the kid, but as far as being a big-time prospect, you know, one of the last big-time prospects they had that was that kind of an arm was Clayton Kershaw himself. So Buehler thus far is certainly off to a nice start. You look at Kershaw in 08, 09, the way that they were counting on him. We had Tommy Lasorda on the show in, I believe it was 2009, and he was saying that year, boy, we're going to need something out of Clayton Kershaw this year. So you almost look at Buehler sort of the same way. I really think that that's kind of the same kind of a deal there. But, yeah, I'm going to say Astros and Dodgers in the World Series. You've said Dodgers and Astros. Steve, so with my Cubs Astros, your Dodgers Astros, what do you say, Ken? Who do you think is going to be in the World Series?
Well, this just in from the planet Zarkon. I have, so I'm preparing you guys and everybody listening out there.
Okay.
To this. I have to agree with Steve, just back up a second here, but the Astros and the Tribe, whoever wins that is going to win the American League and play in the World Series.
Okay.
My rationale is, and like I said, this makes no sense to probably anybody but me, I think it's really, really, really difficult to repeat. And
oh, that's true. I agree.
I think people get complacent, whether you say it or not. I've heard nothing, and here being in Cleveland, I've heard nothing since day one of spring training. We all of these guys, it's payback time. And I'm thinking they've been sitting around, working on their bunting skills, you know, playing Parcheesi in the clubhouse, whatever they do, just waiting for this moment. And they've just been chewing on this bone for a whole year. And so that's why I get the Tribe to come out and be the American League rep, and they're going to play the Brew Crew. For almost the same reason. I think the Brewers are hitting on all cylinders. I had no idea that Yelich was that close to being a Triple Crown winner, which mm-hmm. is unheard of almost. I'm sure there are generations that don't even know what a Triple Crown winner is because they've never heard of one. I don't know when the last one was. You guys probably are better at that than I. But I think the Brewers, for the reasons I mentioned earlier, are just on it. They're just in there. And then I see the Tribe winning because I think they have better pitching. And I also think Hand, Miller, and the rest of the gang are going to really just rise to the top. I have nothing to base that on statistically, which you brought up, Rick. And like I said, would I bet any money on it? Probably not. But it's more than a sentimental bet. I just think the Tribe, their pitching is deep and deeper. And I think, like I said, the way I've watched these two teams go this last month, or like Steve said, even the last 2 or 3 weeks with the Brewers, it's just been fun to watch how they're moving the pieces across the chessboard. And so I'm going with the Tribe. I'm going with the Brewers. And I'm putting the Tribe to finally win this whole thing, and I've even gone so far as last time I saw Paul Dolan, I told him, I said, I think this is it, when they brought on Donaldson. Now, the one thing that does scare me is their outfield. If there is an Achilles heel, it's the three Stooges in the outfield, especially now we got Kipnis out there.
Right.
So, but I'm going to stand by it, and Nanu, Nanu. Back to Zarkon,
well,
I hope.
tell Paul Dolan we want to keep Josh Donaldson, and no fair setting up a GoFundMe account to pay for it, okay? So you knew I was going there. You knew I was, Ken.
I know. I logged it over to get some dialogue. He didn't let me down, right?
You grooved that batting pitch fastball right in there. It would be the envy of anyone in the home run derby the way you grooved it in there. But, you know, it's weird because, you know, and again, look, there's a big four in the American League and the Indians are part of it. So, I mean, this is entirely in the realm of possibility. As great as Houston and Boston have been, it's entirely in the realm of possibility. Even the Yankees with the record that they've had this year. But it is so weird when you look at the structure of Major League Baseball this year that if the Indians made it through two brutal series there, that they would probably go on to be favored in the World Series. And especially if it's not the Cubs or the Dodgers, they'll be favored. It's just really odd that the softest series they could face would be the World Series. But, hey, that's the way you want to have it go if it's been since 1948 in this town. So I'm saying Astros to win it all. Ken, you've said Tribe. Steve, you've identified the two teams. A rematch of last year. How do you see it shaking out?
No, I'm Astros all the way. I picked them on our show before the season. I see no reason to depart from them now.
And I agree with you. It's weird that when you look at it, they went through, they've put up another huge record, they've had another huge season, but statistically, they seem underwhelming, especially given the expectations for the talent up and down the line. A lot of that has been injuries and games missed, but that's what scares me about them, and that's what makes me think they're going to be a little bit extra spring-loaded. It's almost like they've been saving up some of that production for October, and that's what scares me as a fan of a team playing them in the first round here. So two of us on the Astros, one of us on the Indians. A great segment with you guys, as per always. So we'll do some closing thoughts here. Steve, I'll start with you on anything we haven't hit yet that you want to talk about this.
Well, I know we didn't get into individual awards, but I did want to mention this season that Jacob DeGrom had. It's like the most incredible thing I've ever seen. It became like must-watch TV, and you guys know I'm certainly not a Mets fan, but to see what he did week in and week out. Now, you know, it's got to be interesting. I think at 10-9, if Felix Hernandez won at 13-12, I was hoping he'd be under 500. I was hoping he'd be like 9-10. That would be the real test. But when you see what he did, he gave up four runs to Florida, to the Marlins, in the third game of the year, and that was it. Every other game he pitched, it was three runs or less, earned and unearned combined. There was a time when he you know, he had the weakest run support. He's got a 1.70 ERA and over 200 strikeouts. And the only guys who have done that, I think, since 69, the year after Gibson had a 1.12 ERA and they lowered the mound. I think there were three guys like Pedro Martinez and Clemens. I think Doc Gooden and DeGrom.
Yeah.
So I don't see how he doesn't get it. I don't agree with people who say wins are meaningless. That is not true. I agree that wins don't mean as much as they've been given for the last 50, 100 years, but they do mean something.
Yep.
Having said that, it was like the Mets tried too hard whenever this guy pitched. It was so bizarre, and then the next day they score eight runs or something. So I did want to mention his season. I think he is the Cy Young winner, but I found it to be one of the most incredible things. And the only other thing I want to say on DeGrom, and you guys will crack up when you hear this, but you'll understand the history. So they said he broke the record of King Cole of 25 starts in a row of three runs or less, and I think he finished with 28 or 29 for the season. And King Cole did it in 1910. So I actually knew who King Cole was because he's the guy who gave up Babe Ruth's first major league hit. King Cole was on the Yankees, and Babe Ruth was Red Sox, and he got his first hit in 1914 against the Yankee pitcher, a double, which I always thought was incredibly funny. But yeah. King Cole was 20-4 in 1910 for the Chicago Cubs. They won the pennant. And that's when he had a 1.80 ERA. So DeGrom's ERA was even better than his. But he was an interesting guy because he was great for 2 years. He was 18-7 the next year. he had pitched like three games the year before he was 20-4. And then in 1912, he wasn't even in the major leagues. I tried to do some research. He was in the minors. And then he wound up signing with the Yankees, and he was terrible.
Yeah.
And he was out of the league at the age of 28, and unfortunately got cancer at the age of 29 and passed away.
Wow.
So he was an interesting guy. I only knew him as giving up Babe Ruth's first hit, but I like to look at these old-time guys because there's always a story there, and he's got his own story. But the one big story, besides the Yelich thing, which I have to say, Ken, I didn't know until like the last week of the season as well, but I knew he was playing great and was the best of the guys who left, including Stanton. He was the best of the guys who left, you know, Osuna and Gordon. They got rid of their top four players. He was the best of the four, and I think he should be the MVP. But I thought what DeGrom did is something we have not seen before. And I really wish he would have been 9-10 instead of 10-9, because that would have been the real test to see if he could win Cy Young over Scherzer and Nola, who fell off a little at the end of the year.
Wow, Steve, way to drag us down with the premature death there, with the whole thing about that guy dying young. Ken?
I just want to give you the whole story because, you know, nobody in the country will even talk about that.
That's
I just
right.
thought it was fascinating, and I just knew one thing about him. And then he became a big name. Oh, King Cole in 1910, and everybody jokes, oh, you remember King Cole. Well, I like to go look at those guys because there's, you know, the history of baseball. Everybody's got a story, and there's always some incredible story. And frankly, he had one, but you're right. Obviously, it was. The one other thing I'll tell you, I don't know a lot about these things, but Ring Lardner, the famous sports writer, author, he wrote a famous group of books called Alibi Ike.
Uh-huh.
Alibi Ike, as you know, was the guy who always had an excuse. Well, I read that King Cole was the basis for Ring Lardner writing Alibi Ike novels. So.
Wow.
So I've only read one of them, but, you know, he was a superstar for 2 years and then fell off a cliff and must have been making some excuses. But then, of course, a very sad ending at a very young age, 29.
That's right.
29, my Lord.
That's right. All right, well, pick it up from there. Ken, what are your closing thoughts?
I don't know how I can follow that. Well, I can start off with this. Tell both of you guys, and Rick, you may know this already. I get in my fantasy league, our keeper league, Rick, and Steve, I traded away Mr. Yelich. And in the package was Matt Chapman, the third baseman for the A's.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I still lost out on that deal. But, now that I know that, Steve didn't know that he was putting salt on my wound here on Triple Crown stuff. But hey, thanks anyway, Steve. I just have thought, and I've been around this game since I was a young kid as a bat boy, 47 years as a head baseball coach, the changes that are going on. Like you said, the DeGrom is almost unheard of. I mentioned about the Yankees with the home runs, the White Sox with more strikeouts, the Indians with four starters. The shift, people are still flying. The degree, angle degree of home runs that people are saying now that produced all these home runs, which I'm not really happy with. I'd rather see them speed up the games by having Major League Baseball have these guys somehow, some way, put the ball in play more often. Instead of, like I said, I think it's like a softball cake game with all these home runs. Those kind of things. Technology, like Zobrist told the umpire, this is why we're trying to, or something of this nature, going to replace you guys with the strike zone. Things of that nature trouble me. Some of them excite me. Bringing guys on, new managers who've never managed before, but yet we've got Cora going against Boone, possibly here again in the playoffs. So with no experience, major league managing experience that I can remember, things like that. That kind of sums up my summer of watching baseball. Exciting, different, head-scratching, yet it's just I still embrace it. But when I see pitchers throwing 300 strikes in the National League, and I'm not saying DeGrom shouldn't win the Cy Young, but 300 strikeouts, and Scherzer doesn't, I mean, that's unheard of.
Well, no, you're right. That's going to be the argument. That's a good point.
That's right.
So it's been fun. It's been exciting. It's been extremely, probably one of the most unusual summers of baseball I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's been very weird, no question about it. But nobody better to break it down with than you two guys. Thank you both. Steve, appreciate you being on, as always, my friend.
It was fantastic, as I hoped it would be. It's always fun to get together with you two guys.
Really appreciate it. Same to you, Kenny. Thank you so much, my man.
Well, you bet. Thank you both. And I'm going to go out and try to find Al by Ike. I mean, my God. That's just priceless, Steve. I took my notes here, and
We can all go read up on all that. That's our homework assignment before we talk again, is to read up on Al by Ike. But in the meantime, the 2018 MLB postseason, which it has been a pleasure to preview today with these two gentlemen. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for FDH Lounge mini episode number 1044.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.